Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
WGN, John Hanson here on this wonderful Monday evening in downtown Chicago with you till 1 on WGN Nightside here on 720 WGN, and I'm excited for a fun evening, discussions on whatever you want to talk about, but I'm really excited to talk to my former boss and editor over at Block Club Chicago, Seamus Toomey. We worked together over at DNA Info. Many of you know DNA Info. We had a great partnership with them here at WGN Radio, delivering local news all over the place, all over our city, and they've restarted as Block Club Chicago, so we're going to be chatting with them in just a little bit about what they've got going on and some news stories as well. Want you to chime in as well, 312-91-7200, with any text or talks or conversation you want to have, but I've teased this up, and I've got to go with it. And first of all, I want to say hello to Kassara. Kassara, how are you doing here on this wonderful Monday evening?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm still figuring out this board, Kassara. So
you're just trying to make sure that you know where everything
is?
Yeah,
I'm just trying to figure it out. I had something else on for a moment there, and I think I figured out the right lever. But Kassara, you're flying off to London after this, tomorrow, right?
Yeah,
what are you doing
night.
In London?
I'm DJing two events over the weekend, one Friday and one Saturday. So I'm just taking a full week. I figured why not make it a vacation while I have to go work.
Have you ever been to London?
No, this is my first time out of the country, actually.
Out of the country ever? But you got your passports all lined up, everything, you're ready to
go?
Yeah,
I just got the passport like a week ago.
Were you nervous about that or what?
I was a little concerned that I was cutting it very close on time, so I just paid to have it expedited to be safe.
That makes sense.
You know,
okay.
I wanted to think ahead.
So here's what we're going to do, because you're going there for, a full week you're going to go for?
Yeah, I come back next Tuesday, so I'll be back just in time for the 4th of July.
Okay, so you're going there for a good amount of time. You'll be there.
I'll be there for a while.
The reason I bring that up is because I've got a headline about an American woman who flew 4,000 miles to the UK for one very specific reason, and then this person immediately came home. So Drew McEwen, she was left stunned when Georgina Wilkinson, who was disguised as a gardener, showed up at his niece's christening. So Drew is the guy.
Drew's the guy.
Georgina is the American woman.
Right.
She flew out
to the UK
and did something
as a gardener.
Yep. And did this thing very specific. So Georgina posed as a gardener. Drew and his family were taking photos in southern Scotland at this christening. She flew out, she did something, and she immediately flew back. Can you guess what that would be? Why would someone fly 4,000 miles from...
To dress as a gardener.
Yes.
And crash photo taking.
Yes. So what would the motivation be? 312-981-7200. I don't know if we have any prizes we can give away, Kassara, here on WGN Nightside.
Yeah, I got nothing. Sorry.
I'd love for someone to call in and figure out why someone would fly 4,000 miles.
I feel like maybe it was like a Tinder thing gone wrong of sorts.
A dating thing, like a Tinder app.
Yeah,
okay, you fly across.
Because I feel like you have to, I feel like that comes from like a really specific part of your heart for you to spend your hard-earned money to fly to a different country and try to...
And fly right back.
Yeah, and then fly right back. But also to dress as a gardener.
Yeah.
What do you even buy gardener clothes?
Right, I don't know. But that is not correct. But that's a very good guess. I was having trouble trying to think, because I know the answer, obviously, when I was reading the article. It's right in the headline.
I would hope that you would know the answer, because clearly I don't know.
Otherwise, we're lost here for the next 2 hours. So she did this one thing, dressed as a gardener, and she then hopped on an 8-hour flight to return home. So this involves not only her and Georgina and Drew. I'll give you one clue. They do know each other. They've met before. And she had arranged to whatever she did while these family photos were being taken. It's not just a photo bomb. It's an epic one. Drew was left stunned when the gardener stood up and then ran away. Something happened in between, which is the whole point of this. But again, we're trying to see if anyone can guess why someone would fly 4,000 miles across the ocean from America to the UK and leave immediately. And this woman had to leave immediately. There's proof that she went there, she flew there, she came immediately right back. She had to be at work the next day, and she was able to do it. Drew, the man in the UK, says he didn't even get a chance to talk to Georgina, which he was bummed about, but not all in all surprised.
But he was bummed that he didn't get to talk to her.
He was bummed that he didn't get to talk to her.
Oh, that's definitely not a Tinder date going wrong.
No, it wasn't Tinder date. Okay. He was bummed that he didn't get to talk to her, but he understood as
she
ran away.
Back.
Yep, he got it right away. He chuckled. He was not upset by this. She didn't do anything bad to him. So 312-981-7200. Why would someone fly across? So 870 says to photobomb the queen and then make a hasty escape. Good guess. The queen was not there. There did end up being photos of what happened. In fact, the photographer was in on this. But it was not for a photobomb. Drew now is concerned because this has raised the bar of whatever this is between Drew and Georgina. Now, Drew has to return the favor at some point. 312-981-7200, if you can guess why Georgina flew 4,000 miles across the pond to stay in the UK for all of 10 minutes and then fly back to the US, because Sarah will give you no prize. We'll talk to Seamus Toomey and answer that question next on 720 WGN. WGN, John Hansen on WGN Nightside, and joining me now is Seamus Toomey, the editor of Block Club Chicago. Seamus, thanks so much for joining me this evening.
Thanks for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime. This is always the music I play for you as you come in from break there, of course.
Man's got to have theme music.
Yeah, exactly. Seamus, you couldn't hear much about what I was talking about in the when you were in the green room there, but a woman flew 4,000 miles, an American woman, flew 4,000 miles to the UK from the US. She stopped in the UK all of 15 minutes. She did what she needed to do. She met a man named Drew. She did this thing that I'm trying to get people to guess what it is. She flew home immediately. Nobody was upset by it. It went exactly how it was supposed to go. I'm not going to let you guess because I don't want you to guess the right answer. I'm going to go to the phone lines here really quickly, and I got to find the button. There it is. New studio, Noreen. Noreen, what do you think Georgina flew across the pond for? Are you there, Noreen?
Hello?
Hello, Noreen. There we go. I figured it out. So why did Georgina fly across the pond?
Well, I thought maybe she was trying to get a picture of the new royal baby.
Oh, okay. That's a good guess. And there was a christening going on at the time, but this was actually in Scotland, and the new royal baby was not there. So that is not correct, Noreen. But thank you for playing.
Okay.
Noreen, where are you calling from this evening?
From Chicago.
All right, Noreen. Thanks for guessing. We appreciate it. We're going to go to Glenn. Glenn, you're on 720 WGN. Glenn, why did Georgina fly 4,000 miles and then return immediately?
I think she said, tag, you're it. It's a game.
It is tag your it. That is absolutely correct, Glenn. This is a story between eight friends that met years ago in China randomly, and they decided they would start this epic game of tag. And Georgina had arranged to get one over on Drew. She used the help of his brother and sister. They kept it all under wraps. They were at the christening. Georgina walked up as a gardener, and they mentioned to Drew, hey, can you tell that gardener over there to get out of the shot? They're ruining the picture of your christening. Drew walked over, said, hey, gardener, do you mind moving over? Georgina was in the gardening costume, tagged, you're it. Drew knew it, ran away, and Georgina flew home. Would you ever go to those lengths, Glenn, for a game of tag or any other sort of game?
Well, if it's going on and on for years, I think I would. That's great.
Here's the thing. I would build it in as part of a longer trip. Like, if you're flying that far, stay for the week, you know, hang out a little bit. But I guess the rules of the game are you've got to get out of the country immediately. So, I don't know. It's got to be a $2,000, $1,000 game of tag.
Exactly. Well, I guess I'm not in that income bracket.
No, I don't think many of us are. Glenn, thanks for the call, and we appreciate the other call.
Did I win the $10,000?
Oh, yeah, you know what? Okay. Oh, sorry, Glenn, we're going to lose you here on the line. I'm sorry, Glenn, because Sarah says you're getting zero.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Glenn. All right. Yeah, an epic game of tag. 4,000 miles across the pound. Pretty epic stuff. All right, Seamus, too. Would you ever do that, Seamus? Ever done anything like that?
Absolutely not.
Any pranks with friends you used to play, groups of things?
That sounds exhausting. I mean, it's a great idea, but I'm with you. I'm going to stay for about a month or so.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to build it into something else. You're done. Because when I saw the headline, I was like, well, okay. They did tag, then she saw, maybe she explored London a little bit, explored Scotland, but it was not the case.
I got to think the thrill of that wore off like 30 minutes flying home. Like,
oh yeah.
That was kind
of
dumb.
But now she's living and basking in this glory of all the news coverage she's gotten from it. All right, so Seamus, tune in and get you here to talk about Tag late on this Monday night. We're talking about Block Club Chicago, and I want to get to that really quickly before we get to this other story. Why don't you chat really quickly about what Block Club is Chicago is, if people have not heard of it yet?
All right. Well, the easiest way to explain it is that if you had ever heard of DNA Info, we are the people from DNA Info, and we've brought it back to life. DNA Info was a neighborhood news site. It started in New York, spread to Chicago. We ran it in Chicago for 5 years, and we basically just covered neighborhood by neighborhood, much like a small town paper would cover a small town, except we multiplied that, 77 times around the city. And it was a lot of fun. We built up a great audience. Just a lot of people that were finding stories that weren't being told by other media, because we were willing to go to the community policing meetings and the developer meetings and the school board meetings and anywhere we could find a story, we would do it. So, we built up a great audience. We had like 100 million page views, in 2015. So we were rolling along. It came to an end for a variety of reasons. And myself and Jen Sabella and Stephanie Lule got together and said, why don't we try to revive this on our own? We'll make it a nonprofit. We'll ask for subscribers to, pay $5-6 a month and let's give it a shot.
And at its core, I mean, it's strong neighborhood news stories that not only impact the communities where the stories are being told, but sometimes and most of the time these stories end up having these citywide impacts or really are intriguing stories to everyone in the city and beyond.
Right, exactly. I mean, we always say, like, it only really has to matter to that neighborhood we're writing about, but we know that it will resonate at different parts of the city because it's not necessarily just unique to, say, Logan Square. It's,
right.
The same thing's happening on the other side of town. So it's a lot of fun. We get to scoop a lot of people because, we're the only ones paying attention to some of this stuff.
Right. Seamus, we're going to talk more about Block Club Chicago, but we want to talk about an article that came out of the Sun-Times and something that was close to you. Correct me if I'm saying his name wrong, but we're talking about Sarkis Cafe, the owner and the president of Sarkis Cafe. He fed a president. He said Sarkis, how do you say his last name?
Tashjian.
All right, walk us through, because I saw you post this on Facebook today. I had never been to Sarkis Cafe. I imagine a lot of our listeners have. Talk us through why he was important to you and why that place is important to you.
Sure. This was a story written today by the great Maureen O'Donnell of the Sun-Times, who's a wonderful writer, but you don't want her writing about you because she's an obit writer. And
right.
Our dear friend Sarkis passed away a couple days ago at 86. He was a legend in Evanston, Wilmette, Glenview area because he ran this little greasy spoon that was just packed, all morning. It would get tons of high school kids. It would get like Evanston Township kids and New Trier kids and kids from all over. And then they would grow up and they would keep coming back and telling the same stories over and over again. And he was a bigger than life presence. He would come out from around the counter and kiss every woman that walked in. And, he would, hey, my friend, buddy, how are you? all the time. It was probably, questionable nowadays, come to think of it, I say this.
Right.
But he would crack the eggs and throw them across the room and never miss, and he had all these crazy sandwiches, the Loretta sandwich, which was really just bacon and cheese, and the disaster sandwich, and it was just, it was a great hangover cure for a lot of people growing up on the North Shore and the North Side.
Did you go there a lot as a kid, growing up?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was jammed, so you really had to sort of want to be there because you'd have to fight your way in through all these New Trier kids. God love them. But it was a lot of fun. Yeah, I would drive cross country for a disaster sandwich.
Really? What was on the disaster sandwich?
It was some sort of sausage, some sort of meat.
Okay.
John. I'm guessing the not so secret sauce was Lowry's seasoned salt
because
he had just stacks of like gallon buckets of empty Lowry season salt buckets all over the place. So, yeah, it was on a French roll, cheese, onions. Yeah, it was, you know, it really did the trick.
So Sarkis passed away on, it looks like about a week ago, yesterday at Evanston Hospital from heart trouble, 86 years old. Is the cafe still open? Was it still running up until his death, or what's the situation with it?
Yeah, he sold it about 15 years ago. And got out of the business. It's changed hands a couple times, but it's pretty much stayed true to form. So it's at Grosse Pointe Road and Central and Crawford where they all meet in the northwest corner of Evanston. But, I actually bumped into him a couple years ago.
Oh, really?
You know, it was one of those, you know, celebrity sightings like, Sarkis, I haven't seen you in 15 years. And he looked great. And he said he was enjoying retirement and, that he had sold the business to some guy. And, I don't know, sad to see him go, 86 years old. He had a heck of a run, touched a lot of people's lives.
You know, it's interesting because this does really kind of connect to the block. It transitions nicely into what you guys do at Block Club Chicago, even though that story particularly came out of the Chicago Sun-Times. But, you know, I hadn't heard of it, but I think everyone has a neighborhood greasy spoon spot that's got an older guy or an older woman that runs it or that waitress. I know I've covered things over at Lou Mitchell's for WCIU, and there's one waitress that's 90 years old. There's another one that's been there 33 years, and customers that are repeat customers get to know these people, and they don't, you know, you don't get the most press coverage. Most of these places don't have PR. They don't have the money to hire a PR firm to tell these stories. But really, a place like Sarkis Cafe, that's right up Block Club Chicago's alley, something like that. Obviously, this was in Evanston, but the city neighborhood, you guys are talking about these stories already, even just 2 weeks after your launch.
Absolutely. It's something we figured out at DNA Info is that, you know, these beloved institutions, when they open, when they close, when they, you know, are celebrating a milestone, that, you know, people love to read about it and weigh in, share it, say, hey, how about you remember when we went there? So we sort of like dropped all the pretense and said, you know, we don't really need to have a time peg on this thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always joke that no one does a 37th anniversary story like DNA Info did. You know, it's like, why are we doing this? I don't know, because people love
people
this.
People like it. People are talking about it. 312-917-200 if you want to join into the conversation. I got a text from the 312. So glad to have Block Club Chicago step up to take over when we lost DNA Info. Thank you so much. So that's always important stuff to see and along those lines. And I mentioned that's sort of the feedback you guys have gotten over the last couple weeks, right?
Yeah, it's been wonderful. People welcoming us back and, signing up and sending us story ideas. And that was one of the things when we were shut down for a while is that people would write to us and say, I've got a great DNA Info story. I've got nowhere to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're like, well, here we are.
What is, so I imagine a lot of the challenge was obviously getting started with this thing. Obviously, DNA Info had an apparatus in place that had been built over years, an audience that you guys had cultivated over years. What has it been like? What have the challenges been like as you're trying to start something from scratch? And you mentioned Jen and you mentioned Stephanie, who I know very well. You guys are all smart, smart people, but none of you have the development side of things really that to build a site from scratch. So what has that process been like?
It's been daunting, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a lot of things that, we had to deal with. You know, how do we rent some office space? You know, how are we going to raise the money to get this off the ground? How do we attract subscribers? How do we promote it? HR, you know.
Yeah.
All that.
Where do you even go with that stuff? I mean, you're obviously going to have employees, you're paying them and they need health insurance. I wouldn't even know where to begin with that.
Yeah. It's really, you know, one bite at a time.
Yeah.
You know, just make a list and let's knock off a couple things each day. We had a little bit of a runway to do it. And so, you know, we closed down in November and we just launched, June 13th. Now we've been working pretty much nonstop throughout that, writing stories. We've been posting some stuff online, not on our real site, but the real site is up, blockclubchicago.org. It's, you know, it was loaded with stories when we launched. The folks that we're working with in New York, a company called Civil, were laughing at us because we had like 80 stories published.
Already ready to go.
On day one. And I'm like, what's wrong with you guys?
You guys have been itching at it. You've been, obviously, got a team of reporters some of them have worked at DNA Info and covered neighborhoods. Elisa Hauser in Wicker Park talking about 80 stories. She probably did about 40 of them for that first day because she's a grinder. But you got Mina Bloom as well, Lee Edwards on the South Side, other reporters as well that aren't, I'm sure there's others that I can't even get to mind, but you've other people that wrote for DNA Info that are doing some freelance work. I imagine that is a great way to, like, figuring out the technical side, how you pay people, how you get health insurance, all that stuff is great. But it doesn't mean anything without the content. So at least you guys know, and you must feel confident in the reporters you have and the stories you're going to be able to tell.
Right, and that was the part that really made this work, was that, you know, we knew some available reporters. You know, we were all in the water. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were able to round up as many as we could. You know, we couldn't get everyone, and, you know, we'd love to grow down the road. But, yeah, like you said, we got Mina Bloom and Lisa Hauser and Kelly Bauer and Mauricio Pena and Lee Edwards, and we just... you know, they knew how to cover their neighborhoods.
Right.
And that was, you know, that was a really important part, was to just to be able to hit the ground running. They've got the source network already built up.
Yeah. The biggest selling point for Block Club Chicago, as it was for DNA Info, you and I always talked about this, was that the story, I mean, I got to do this cool thing at DNA Info with radio, and we'd tell stories also on WGN, we'd tell them on Fox, all that sort of stuff. But it was the stories themselves, like, it made it very easy because they were such great stories. So after we take a quick break and then the news, Seamus, I'd love to share some of those early stories that you got going on, if you don't mind sticking around, if that's okay with you.
I'm here.
All right, good. Good. WGN Nightside, John Hansen in tonight, and joined by Seamus Toomey of Block Club Chicago, formerly of DNA Info. You know, eventually, Seamus, we love DNA Info, but we'll stop saying that. But that's just the easiest way to tell people what Block Club Chicago is.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing as well.
Just down on your business cards there as well. Okay, let's talk about some of the stories, because nothing sells Block Club Chicago and the idea of neighborhood news than talking through the stories that make these stories interesting. And one of the ones that struck me immediately when I was reading it earlier today was the story out of the South Side. And these bar, I never heard of this, these raffles that take place that benefit charity, but don't get it wrong, you're winning a lot of money here if you win this raffle. These Queen of Hearts raffles that are drawing in prizes over $1 million just at VFWs and bars, right?
It's incredible. And the one that we've been focusing on, and this has been one of our top stories since mm-hmm. we started, is the one going on at McNally's on Western mm-hmm. in Morgan Park. The thing just keeps rolling over. It's rolled over for like 39 straight weeks.
And this isn't like Powerball where the odds are 1 in a billion, because I was wondering, I'm like, well, maybe the odds are astronomical, but they have 54 cards, the whole deck plus two jokers, and they put a card in an envelope and they label them 1 to 54, and you just have to find the Queen of Hearts, right?
Exactly. And so what you do is I can't calculate the odds because you got to know exactly how many tickets they sold.
Okay.
But what they do is they sell 6 tickets for $5. You got to write your name on it. They throw them into a pot, and then once a week they draw one ticket, and that person on that ticket gets to pick one of the cards to flip
over. So it's not everyone that buys the tickets gets a guess. Because that's what I thought it was. I was like, oh, man, then how is this rolled over? But I see. You have to be that person to pick.
Exactly.
And then you have a 1 in 54 chance.
Exactly. And so once you choose a card, they flip it over, and that's done, though. So there's only, what are we down to, you know, like 17 cards left.
So the odds theoretically improve over time. Okay, that makes sense to me.
Exactly. And the pot keeps rolling over. Interesting. The pot has rolled over to, it's almost $1 million right now, which is, you know, only in Chicago, like, there is a law that says the pots can't be more than $1 million. So, you know, instead of just like, you know, starting on a new raffle, they've changed the law.
Right.
You know, the alderman down there, Matt O'Shea, introduced an ordinance, and they voted on it this week in the finance committee. They're going to approve it on Wednesday, but basically it quadruples the legal limit for a raffle in Chicago. So
up to 4 million?
Up to 4 million. So don't worry, McNally's fans, it'll keep rolling over.
Well, what makes this different than gambling on the streets or the CTA, which is blamed? I mean, this is a form of gambling. Is it the fact that there is a charity element to it which allows people to kind of look the other way on this?
Well, you know, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, like it's a 50-50 raffle, so it's at $1 million now. The winner gets half.
Right.
And the other half goes to St. Cajetan's Catholic School down in the neighborhood.
Wow, so, that's a ton of money. they're going to get.
Exactly, exactly. They're going to build a new wing or something.
I just hope they're not stashing these dollar bills that they get from somewhere in the bar. I hope that they have a bank account they take this stuff to. I'm sure they're smart about this stuff because it's well advertised where all this money is.
I would imagine after 38 weeks, they're quite good at hiding the money.
All right, so Howard Ludwig helped write this story, but I imagine people are just fascinated by it because a lot of people, if you don't live in that neighborhood, like a lot of these stories, you may not know anything about this, and that's what's interesting because as someone that lives on the north side, I find this fascinating. I want to know why my local pubs do not have these giant raffles. I want to drive to McNally's.
Well, I mean, and the funny thing about this is that, you know, sometimes McNally's is a little sleepy. Not anymore. I mean, people are lining up there, you know, they're getting there at like 11 a.m., buying tickets, and you got to write your name on each one of them.
Right.
So some people have made rubber stamps so they can just stamp the ticket so they don't have to write their name on the 1,000 tickets that they buy. So, you know, you've got this cottage industry of people buying the tickets, stamping their names on them, drinking beer, filling up the bar. You know, there's lines outside in the mornings to get into this place.
That's crazy. 708 wants to know, do you have to buy in at the beginning, or can you still buy in every week? And the person from the 708 says, thank you very much, signed Rich. I imagine it's a weekly thing. You just go, you get the tickets you want for that week. You don't have to have done it from the beginning, right?
Exactly. They toss everything after that drawing. Either, you know, you either win or you start all over again. So, you know, I can see how this plays out. This is going to be someone listening tonight that, you know, drives from Evanston and buys the tickets and wins.
Should get a cut then. I mean, come on. We should get a little love in that. I just find that fascinating because obviously it's great for the person who wins. But, I mean, it's great business for the bar. You're not going to go there and just buy tickets. You're going to have a couple beers while you're there. And it's great for the business owner as well. I mean, I guess it's one of those things that everyone benefits. So who cares? But I know I was reading some comments on sites, other sites that were talking about the story too. I mean, there are gambling people that are obviously anti gambling activists who are saying, no, this is bad for the community, etc., similar to the arguments you see with a lot of. See, we've been talking about this story, never been to McNally's, and I'm fascinated by it. Way to go, Block Club Chicago. What other things have you guys been working on recently? I saw something about penguins and drama happening at the Lincoln Park Zoo due to penguins. I don't know if you have that story handy, but that's always an interesting one.
Right. This is from the hard-hitting side of Block Club. But at Lincoln Park Zoo, they've got the African penguin exhibit.
Uh-huh.
It's not that old, and penguins are typically monogamous. So,
right.
But they noticed something strange last year is that these ones are not. And so they have been paying attention closely to the drama of there's, you know, swapping partners and fighting over each other. And so the folks that take care of the penguins have started writing a blog that they're calling All My Penguins to just highlight the drama going on in front of all these visitors. And it's quite interesting. You know, they said Madiba the penguin can't pick between Dudley and Mandela, and Maynard has a soft spot for Aiden, but she's also seeing Pilchard, and it's just, you know, sort of the ridiculous stuff that plays out. But the zoo is they're working in some educational tidbits.
I was just going to say, of
blog.
Course they're trying to work
exactly.
This stuff
so in. They figured out a way, like, hey, we've got people's interest on something offbeat. Let's teach them a little bit about penguins and their habitats and, you know, how they're gonna, you know, survive. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I gotta ask about this dog story. This was one of your first ones that came out, and I want to invite the listeners here to play along as well. 312-981-7200. You can text or call on in. We're so used to saying Fido and Spot as those common names for dogs, but you guys actually were able to find out the most common dog names here in Chicago, and you broke it down, what, by neighborhood or by zip code? And first of all, I got to ask, obviously this cannot be an exhaustive list. You guys are great reporters going door to door, but you certainly didn't go door to door and ask every single dog owner. How did you guys get this information?
This was a Kelly Bauer special. Kelly Bauer is a wonderful reporter with a very creative mind. What she did is she got a hold of all the dog registrations in Chicago. I think she went back 4 years, from
okay.
to 2014. And, you know, big caveat, you know, breaking news, not everyone registers their dog
right.
in the city of Chicago
right,
or
right,
anywhere.
Right.
But so anyway, these are the dogs whose owners filled out the form and, you know, proved their existence. But so that's how she did it. She crunched tens of thousands of names, and you'll be happy to know there are two dogs in Chicago named Hambone.
I was not surprised by that. For those of you who probably don't know, a lot of my friends decided to call me Hambone in college, and that nickname has stood as John Hanson. I don't see how that goes to Hambone, but that's been a name that I've been called. So, yes, there's two Hambones in Chicago that's dogs. We got the top 10 most popular dog names in Chicago. 312-981-7200. Can you guess them? There's a lot of, there's some names on here that I don't think are an entire surprise, but there's a bunch that I was pretty shocked of. I've never even met some of the dogs with this name, especially the number one one. So if anyone could guess the number one dog name, and the way to really easily cheat and get the answer is just go to blockclubchicago.org, .com, right? Or all of them? .org.com.
All of them.
All of them. Doesn't matter. Google it and you'll find out and you can go ahead and reveal the answer that way. But what I like about this is, because did you actually break it down by map geographically where you can play around on this thing?
Right, there's a map in there where you can click on your neighborhood and see.
So this is crazy.
Take a wild guess at what that dog walking by his name is.
Well, what I love about this story is I think it's something fascinating for anyone who lives in Chicago. Of course, dog owners, I don't own a dog, but I'm curious about it. But you guys are really committed to telling stories in different ways. I think that one of the fascinating things that you guys have done, I've been fascinated by your Instagram stories that tease the stories of the day. As you log on Instagram, you flip through what you've got. And this dog story has an interactive map where you can click on all these things. Is that one of your missions, is to not only tell the stories the way that you'd read them top to bottom on the website, but in ways that people find interesting?
Absolutely. I mean, we are open to just about any way to engage the audience and, you know, show it to them a little bit differently than then be seeing it on another site where, you know, we're open to suggestions, of course. You know, readers send in tips all the time and think stories we should chase. We're open to anything. If it's interesting to you or to us, we'll write about it. We're game.
All right. So I've got some texts coming in. I'm going to read through a few of these. You have the top 10 list nearby, Seamus?
I have it right
so
here.
So you're going to give the answer. The top 10 dog names in Chicago of those people who register their dogs. Someone wants to know, is Ditka on the list?
The coach is not in the top 10.
Ditka, not on the list. Also from the 630. Butt Kiss. Is Butt Kiss on the list? Obviously a Bears theme going on.
You know what?
It should be. That's a good dog name.
That is a good dog name. I think that was. I think Rocky Balboa had a dog named Butt Kiss, or maybe it was a turtle.
Right.
But not. You know, Dick Butt Kiss did not make the top 10.
All right. 312 says Duke. Does Duke make the top 10 of dog list names in Chicago?
No Duke.
No Duke.
I know some good dog jokes with Duke in it, but that is not.
Especially if you put an accent on the E, that changes the whole pronunciation of the name. 708 also asked about Duke, but also says Brutus. Is Brutus on the name?
Oh man,
these are good ones. These are good.
These
dog
are good names.
Names.
These are tough dog names.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I would say that the number one dog name is a little less tough than Brutus or
I'm shocked
Butt Kiss.
By the number one, but it is kind of a clear runaway. But okay, so what about Max? Do we have a Max on the list?
Ding, ding, ding.
All right.
Max comes in at number two. That's a solid dog.
That's a good one.
Solid dog.
That's
name.
A good one. What about Spike? We got 815. Spike. Does Spike make the list?
Spike is not on the list. You know what? This will not shock you, but there are a ton of Cubs-related dogs.
Well, that leads me to my next one. 773 wants to know if Sammy's on the list. And here's the sad fact about it, is if these were dog names maybe 10 or 15 years ago, Sammy might have been on that list. But time passes, and dogs don't live all that long, and the legend of Sammy Sosa has, when he leave the Cubs, 03, 04, something like that. So is Sammy on the list?
Sammy is not on the list. He's waiting to be welcomed back.
Yes. As soon as the Cubs welcome him back, as soon as Sammy admits what he did wrong, there will be more Sammy dog names. I'm going to do one more, then we're going to take a quick commercial break because the lines are lighting up here. 312 says Rizzo. Is Rizzo on the list?
He's on the list. He's not in the top 10, but there are 32 dogs named some version of Rizzo, including an Anthony Rizzo.
Anthony Rizzo,
Anthony
the dog.
Rizzo, yeah.
And Wrigley. I'll go with Wrigley. Is Wrigley on the list?
125 Wrigleys.
125 Wrigleys in Chicago, out of the registered dog.
Out of the registered ones. I mean, there's Schwarbers and there's Bryants.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll get to those in a little bit. Again, keep on getting your texts in. We'll try and finish off the list or give you the rest of the top 10 and also tackle some other maybe harder-hitting stories that Block Club Chicago is working on here on 720 WGN.
Who let the dogs out?
I mean, mean, Kassara is a pro. I always love working with you, Kassara. You always have the best bump-ins. You know what to do. Ah, Kassara, we're going to miss you when you're in London for a little bit, but you'll be back, and we'll work together soon.
I'll be right back.
WGN 720, John Hanson in on WGN Nightside here with Seamus Toomey, the Block Club Chicago editor and a former editor at DNA Info Chicago as well. Launched about a couple weeks ago, and the one story that's made a lot of traction. Did you guys get a lot of traffic on this dog story, by the way? I'm sure people are curious if they have similar dog names than everyone else.
It's people have been finding it, yes.
All right, so let's go through a couple of them. You had a guess, Kassara, right, for most top 10 dog names in Chicago. What was your guess?
Yeah, my guess is Coco.
Coco. Is Coco on the
Coco's
list?
Coco's on the list.
Oh,
Coco's on the list. Number six. No Yahtzee.
No Yahtzee. Is Yahtzee on the list? No. You mentioned Cubs players' names. A lot of people are jumping in with other ones. Someone wants to know, is Chance on the list? Maybe Chance the Rapper, Southside Love.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
That's a good name. I like that one.
That would be a good one. You know what? Not yet.
Okay.
Give him a little bit
of
time.
Right.
I do know a Chance the Dog. My good friend Briarly has a Chance the Dog. So I can vouch for at least one Chancellor out there. And it is Chancellor as well.
So. Oh, okay. It takes time, like, for these things to happen. So I imagine we'll see some Chances soon and maybe some Wilson for Wilson Contreras. Obviously an up-and-running rising star amongst the Cubs. All right. 847 says Bella. Where is Bella on the list, or is Bella on the list?
Bella is the number one dog name in Chicago.
Did that surprise you?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, you know, I would have gone right to Wrigley, something like that. You know, something that, you know, I don't know.
Specific, yeah, something Chicago specific that was well known. But Bella, do you know any Bella dogs?
I know a bunch of Bella women. No Bella.
You know a
dogs.
Bunch of Bella women?
Sure.
Really?
I mean,
I don't think I know any Bella women either.
I know two Bellas.
Really? Yeah,
absolutely.
I know one Bella dog.
Okay.
That's it. Just one.
I would never have guessed that, although I guess with female names of dogs, I don't know, maybe they have more variety. I just can't think of a ton of them. Lola would be one. Is Lola on the list? I don't have the list in front of me.
Lola's number eight.
Okay, so I know a few Lola the dogs. Never heard of a Bella the dog, but that is the number one dog name in Chicago. Again, the caveat being of registered dogs in the city. What about Kaner? Someone wants to know. Nick from the 815 going Blackhawks. Is Kaner on the list?
Kaner absolutely is on the list. It does not crack the top 10, but yes, there are 24 dogs either named Kane or Kaner.
Ah, that's awesome. So you have the exhaustive list in front of you here, but yeah, that's some pretty incredible stuff.
Kelly dug very deep into this list. She's also a huge Blackhawks fan. So
I guess that, you know, I don't know if you talked to Kelly about how she came up with this idea, but I imagine that's what you encourage your reporters to do, and they know how to do this stuff. It's if they're curious about it, readers are going to be curious about it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we try to stress that, you know, life is about a lot of things. It's not just necessarily what happened in City Hall today or you know, the gloom and doom of that sometimes gets reported around the city. Mm-hmm. The city is a mosaic of great stories, of terrible stories, of boring stories. We try to skip the boring stories if possible. But, you know, just a little bit of the fabric of living in a city. And, and so we encourage reporters to look for all kinds of stories and really present a full image of what living in Chicago is like.
Part of that fabric of living in a city, I think, is walking the streets and not knowing you pass certain buildings, some door fronts, and you see them all the time, and you don't really know what's going on inside of them. And a real fascinating story from Elisa Hauser today about Bucktown's last Chicago tannery. Explain what a tannery is and the fact that Bucktown has one.
Well, a tannery is essentially where they make leather, where they cure leather. And you know, it's surprising that there's anything other than tanneries in Bucktown. At one point, there were 27 of them, you know, lining the Chicago River and really, you know, throwing up quite a smell in the area.
Was that tied to the stockyards that were on the south side, that it was easy and made sense to have tanneries near where you had, or at least along the river where they could go with to make the leather?
Exactly. It was all about the river. You know, it's you know, just put them on a barge and ship them down the river, like so many of the businesses that are packing up and leaving the riverfront, just because it's become a hot neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about, you know, getting barges there simply. Now you can just truck them there from wherever.
Right.
But, the Horween Tannery is the last standing tannery in Chicago. They are responsible for NFL footballs. So,
really?
Right. So, I mean, everyone has seen their leather at some point. But they make beautiful shoes, all, you know, all kinds of things. The sky's the limit on it. But, Alisa, actually, she went there on a tour because some of the new neighbors in the area were wondering, what is that smell?
Really?
And, you know, and they were, you know, there were some complaints. And Skip Horween, the I forget which generation he is, but it's been in his family since 1920, welcomed everyone in, set up a tour, and said, this is what we do. It's not a mystery, you know, but we have, you know, we've got patented processes of how you cure leather. And a lot of it involves soaking it in this, basically this concoction that seeps all of the color and the, you know, all the different things into the leather to cure it. And so he walks her through the process. She's got great photos of it. And sort of the idea of, like, demystifying, like, what is that factory over
right there?
It's, you know, it's something that reporters love doing,
yeah,
like getting inside factories. My Neil Steinberg over at the Sun-Times is an expert at it as well, where he tells a great story about the potato chip factory. And, you know, he couldn't figure out what the little tiny potatoes were used for, and he would just mystify them, and he asked, and he said, well, we use those little tiny potatoes for the little tiny bags of potato chips because you wouldn't want to get just one chip in those bags. We got to load them up with little tiny chips. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, just little stuff like that you don't really think about until, you know, some curious soul goes in there and asks the question. And Alisa did that at the tannery.
You're right about a fascination with factories. And I think that stems, I remember as a kid watching on Mr. Rogers, he'd show little videos of how things get made. There's documentaries all the time about how things get made. And just to see that process is fascinating. And I got to go to the Ferrara candy factory, which you see right off the Eisenhower. You see that big sign out on, I don't know if it's Harlem or it's a little west of there. But the Ferrara candy factory, and just, first of all, it smelled incredible in there. But just how different things happen on different floors and the transportation of it, and just see how many employees are still working in those, even though a lot of them have been taken over by robotics and stuff. I went to a window-making company, and then I had no idea how windows are made, how screens are made, but you would have no idea how technical and crazy the process is. So Alisa Hauser got on this tour and got to see some stuff. How big of a building are we talking? Is it a giant factory-like sort of thing?
It's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. It's, you know, right along the river. You wouldn't necessarily know what it is, you know, without getting inside. But it's there's amazing things there. You know, all the animal hides are in the basement, and that really is, you know, basically the smell that's coming from there. And they say, you know, we try not to store too many of the hides on site because they're aware of, you know, the funk that comes off of them. But, you know, it's, people are moving into that neighborhood. They're buying very expensive condos.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a, you know, Whole Foods right there. You know, it's interesting, this meshing, you know, industry with fancy condos that's going on in Bucktown and, you know, other places up and down the river.
Well, you mentioned the changing neighborhoods. I feel like that's something that DNA Info and hopefully I imagine at Block Club Chicago will kind of have a pulse on. And I think that's a lot of topics of conversation, gentrification, how neighborhoods change. Logan Square having currently changing. Humboldt Park might be next. Avondale might be next. People say Wicker Park changed long ago. Do you feel like that's something that you guys are able to do really well just because you've got boots on the ground in those neighborhoods, people that live in those neighborhoods, and they're able to take the pulse of the community, whether people are pro or against change?
Exactly. That's, you know, gentrification and all the various ramifications. It's a huge topic for us. Mauricio Pena, our Pilsen reporter, has been working on stories about what's going on in Pilsen. Mina Bloom's been has been writing exhaustively about different issues about Logan Square, including the schools. You know, what happens to the schools when, you know, major populations move out and younger populations move in? It's fascinating. You know, the businesses that come in, the reaction from the existing residents, the rent prices. We try to chronicle that pretty closely because it is, again, the fabric of Chicago, that something could be happening in one neighborhood that is similar to another one, but people on the far side of town may not realize.
We got about 30 seconds left. Really quickly, you had some news. You're going to be partnering with Heather Sharon and the folks over there to talk about City Hall, right? What's that partnership like?
Sure. They run a site called The Daily Line, and they cover politics in Chicago pretty closely. You may have heard of them as Alder Trek. They rebranded as The Daily Line, and Heather was our City Hall reporter at DNA Info, so she's teaming up with us on this collaboration with them, so it's great to get another member of the band back together.
And blockclubchicago.com.org, doesn't matter, Google it, and all the social media, Block Club Shy, right?
You got it.
All right, Seamus Toomey, best of luck with everything. I imagine it's a grind. You have late nights, whether or not you come on WGN or not. But I imagine that you're excited to be finally kind of hit the ground running.
You know, this is so much fun to do, and we are so thrilled to be able to do it again, and we're so thankful for our readers for sticking with us and coming back to us after a brief break.
Yeah, we're really excited for all that you got coming up. All right, Seamus, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a million.
All right.
Hambone.
Yeah, thanks very much, Bella. WGN, John Hanson here on WGN Nightside, now on this Tuesday morning here in Chicago. And again, blockclubchicago.org or .com. We just had Seamus Toomey in talking in about some of their stories, and still hearing the music. There we go. We're still figuring out the new board, Casera. How am I doing? I just walked in here, and everyone's like, oh, it's just like the old board. And pretty much for the most
great.
Part. Yeah.
I think you're doing great. Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about this article, Casera, and, you know, you're a millennial. I don't want to reveal, if you're comfortable revealing how old you are, you're more than welcome to at this point.
Yeah, 22.
22. So you're young, really young. I'm reading this article from LinkedIn, and it kind of surprises me, and I'd love your input, 312-981-7200. I imagine, Esmeralda, if you have anything you want to say about this. This is a fact. How are you doing, by the way, Esmeralda? Everything good in Esmeralda land?
Hey, what up, Ez?
Hey.
Did I catch you mid-bite, by the way?
I'm sucking on Ricolas.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still sick?
I just have allergies, and it messes with, it's, you know, sinuses, nose, throat.
What allergy
is it? And
then
it didn't help that, you know, yelling for pride.
For pride, yeah. That's how I feel, too. I was yelling a lot.
Had a great time yesterday. She was yelling and
so
dancing.
Fun.
And
Were you in the WGN float, Esmeralda?
Yes, WGN radio float. And it was, and we all had fun because of, one, the energy in the crowd, but Casera's DJing was awesome.
Casera, you DJed it?
Yeah, I DJed on the float.
Oh, that's awesome.
She was,
awesome.
Like, leading the float. She was in the front.
Yeah, I was in the front of it, you know?
Did you go, like, gay anthems, like the go-to songs, more modern music, or, like, did you mix it up?
I did a really good mix. I started off with, like, I'm Coming Out, and then we got, like, to the middle where it was, like, a really large crowd. And I played Bodak Yellow by Cardi B.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And it was like a great sing-along. But I also played classics like Mariah Carey's Always My Baby, you know, Backstreet Boys. I made the crowd sing a lot. I have a lot of videos of people singing with me, so.
Yeah, that was insane.
Man.
Because there's just songs I was like, I don't know. I know the song, but I don't know it. And people would just be yelling.
Go crazy.
The word, it was insane.
We had a DJ Mike P from WCIU who's on the jam with us on the morning show. He was DJing our float. It was very similar. Some gay anthems that get everyone singing and a little Katy Perry would get everyone going. But the new stuff, I mean, obviously it's a young crowd there that's at Pride, not exclusively young, but man, that crowd, I don't know if it was the weather or what it was, because I've done a bunch of these prides now. That was maybe the most energetic, and I think now I know why. It's because, Casera, you were warming them up way ahead of us.
Yeah, probably.
We really appreciate your help.
I mean, there were other people in front of me DJing, but I think they were just waiting for me to come through, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't know. No shade to anybody else before me, but, you know. I had to get the party started.
You know, I was going to talk about this LinkedIn article. I'm going to get to it in a second because I want to talk about Pride because I had an interesting interaction with someone on Facebook, which is always a great place for social debate and discussion of relevant issues. It was bad. But it ended up okay because it was a gentleman who lives on the southwest suburbs, and he's a single dad, and he mentioned that a few times. He raised two boys. They're in their 20s now, which is a struggle. But he kept on asking. He started out the conversation by saying, don't you homosexuals know that this makes you look bad?
What?
He was just saying that people in the straight community find the gay parade to be offensive and the coverage of it. It makes homosexuals look bad. Don't you feel embarrassed for yourself? And then he cited the fact that he had met two lesbians in a bar once and they agreed with him. And I just had to simply point out that as a homosexual, it doesn't make me embarrassed. You do see some very interesting things at the parade, some things you may not see in everyday life downtown Chicago in the suburbs. You do see some things that sometimes even don't offend me, but I wouldn't wear that or I wouldn't do that. But, you know, the whole point is to say, well, who cares?
Yeah.
people live their life the way they want to live it. That's the whole point of Pride.
I want to know what bar he went to.
I don't know. And I'll give this guy credit, because we went back and forth on Facebook, and that usually devolves into a terrible discussion. But he didn't say anything that I agreed with, but he at least was willing to listen back and forth and respond cordially. So I appreciate that. But it always just drives me crazy. And then he went to that old kind of place that a lot of people go to. Maybe you listeners feel the same way. Feel free to text or call 312-981-7200. I'd love to engage in respectful conversation about this. But the notion of, he said, why isn't there a parade for single dads like me? Why doesn't anyone celebrate what I get to do?
What does he get to do?
Well, that he raised kids on his own. He basically said, why are there parades to value who you have sex with? Why does that matter? And I had to explain that that's not what the Pride Festival is, not just about who chooses to have sex with who, what genders, or if you're fluid or transgender, whatever the case, pansexual, whatever the case may be. It is a celebration of your ability to love who you want to love and to do it in a way that you want to do it without fear, or hopefully fear, of being persecuted, being killed, being harassed. And not only harassed or killed or violence, but also legally, that our justice system still has many loopholes in it that allow homosexuals or people LGBT community to be discriminated against. That still exists in many states. Just because gay marriage is now legal in all 50 states due to the 2015 Supreme Court ruling, many, many states, they can still deny you be able to rent an apartment because you're gay. You can still be fired because you're gay, and I believe a majority of states. I'll look up the stats here in the next break, but for the Illinois has more protections than many other states. It's a blue state, but there's many states that you can still be fired. You come out, and you can be fired, and there's no protections against it. So that's what the Pride Parade is. And then I mentioned that, you know, that's what the Pride Parade's about. And he said, well, there's been so much progress lately. Why do you still need a parade? And I said, the reason why you have gotten the progress is because people have been willing to be out, be themselves, and because you have to change hearts and minds along with it. So the one thing I will agree with him on, that I will give him it, is that when news coverage, and I work for a TV station, and we try in our best not to do this, but I have seen a parade coverage in years past, even when I was growing up as a kid. And this is just TV people being TV people, I feel like. They choose the craziest things that they see at the parade that they're able to capture in their news coverage. You know? Yes. They show the most outlandish, or what people might deem offensive, or, you know, most scandalous costumes. And I put all those in quotes because I don't feel like they are. And I shouldn't say costumes, outfits, wares, or that's someone identifies, that's how they dress in their normal day life. They put those in the forefront. So I imagine that if you are trying to change hearts and minds, and you have someone that is skeptical or doesn't know many LGBT people, hasn't had these conversations, and you see that, I could see how people can have a reaction and say, that offends me, or that scares me, or that's different than what I know.
Right.
And I guess what I challenge people to do that might be feeling that, at 312-917-200, I'd love to hear from you, is to hear what offends you, you know, to look past that, to say that, look, that not everyone in the parade is doing that. Not everyone is dressed like that. There's a lot of mothers, two moms with their kids there. There's a lot of, kids there that are experiencing the parade and learning what it means to be. There's conversations happening. There's grandmas. I saw there was a whole line of grandmothers that had signs that said, you know, grandmothers that just came out to their grandkids, stuff like that. It's about the whole community. Shout out to grandmas, exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
So, anyways,
yeah, my mom went with me.
Yeah, it's.
I feel like it's a beautiful thing.
Right.
I feel like it's important. Like I get that he's upset. Like,
mm-hmm. And he's not the only one.
There's not a parade for single dads or single moms, but I mean,
no one's killing him or
yeah,
going
no one's
after
killing
people. No
single
one's,
parents
yes,
for being a single
for
parent.
Being that. Yes.
Right.
No
you
one
know,
is.
But people can be killed or just slain just for being who they are, or just dressing a certain way.
Yes.
Yeah. Loving who they want to love.
I don't know. I just feel like in 2018, I'm surprised we still have to have these conversations, but we see it with the NFL policies of the kneeling and all that, that we still have to remind people what the point of protesting is and all that. Anyways, we're going to get to a local protest here in a bit, and Domati Pongo is going to join me. I don't know. Which mic are you on, man? I don't even know. I'm just going to turn them all on. You on five? There you go. Don't you?
There
how
we
you
go,
my friend.
I'm good. This conversation is good.
This is
a great conversation because there's so many different ways that I identify with this conversation as an African American, as a first generation American as well. I think you guys are hitting it right on the money. I mean, that is a big difference between being persecuted for who you are and a parade that just celebrates the fact that you exist for being a single dad. You guys are hitting it on the money, man.
312 says, I just opened up my position on this topic to many other groups that you more than likely would not like to see holding a parade. I don't quite know what he's saying. Maybe he's making the argument of, I wouldn't want to see the KKK having a parade and things like that. And yes, I could not want to see that, but I would never argue that they wouldn't have the rights to be able to do that. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
That's a whole nother argument. I mean, that's a group that promotes hate and promotes violence, not a group that promotes love and acceptance.
But this what about me-ism, there's a quick way to fix it. Whatever it is that you want to do, you can start it. Like, there's the Real Men Cook Festival on Father's Day. That was this year on Sunday, June 17th. This gentleman who you talked to on Facebook could have been at that, that event. You know, it celebrated dads, single dads, father figures. I mean, there are several things that you, and whatever you feel should exist in society, create it, rather than chastise people who have created safe spaces for their respective communities.
Right. When people say, when is the straight parade? It's every day. Every day is a straight parade. Every day is is White History Month. You know, when the people say that about versus Black History Month.
Yes.
You know, the reason for, the motivation for these things are to shed light on things past that have happened negatively, to shed light on the positive aspects of certain communities, and to promote the idea of coming together and recognizing that when you just walk a mile in someone else's shoes and shut up and learn something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we can all move on. And at the end of the day, who cares if people have a parade and walk? What is offensive about people walking, even if they are scandalously dressed or it's something you wouldn't see every day? Who cares? You don't have to watch it.
I do want to get at this idea of safe spaces, though. Like, what is a safe space? Why are they important? What do they mean, right? Because I hear things like with the Bud Billiken Parade, African-American back-to-school parade, the biggest in the city. And you may see, you know, like DJ Cash said, she was playing Bodak Yellow. Mm-hmm. And say people are dancing, people are loud, people are being themselves. You'll have people in the audience who say, oh, this makes us look bad because you're being your authentic self in this moment. Whether if you're African-American, if that means you're being loud and if that's a negative stereotype, or if you're gay at the gay pride parade and you're being out and just being flamboyant, and people say that makes you look bad. I just want to talk about the value of having a safe space where you can be your authentic self, whatever that means. And it's for the people within that community who understand what that interaction looks like in a way that's different than those who aren't a part of that community, and that kind of voyeurism that happens when you just watch people embracing who it is that they are. You get what I mean?
Yeah, I want to dive into this. We got to take a quick commercial break, but Domenti, let's dive into the safe space thing, because that is something I feel like, especially in the LGBT community, I can speak to, that has become less important over the years because of how much more accepted people are of LGBT, but it still remains a very vital thing, especially for certain subsections of the LGBT community. Let's dive into that. I still got to figure out where the commercials are on this board. Here they are. Quick commercial break, back with more on 720 WGN. And Doty, you are feeling this one here, my man.
Something about this song, man.
All right, I don't know anything about this song. Who is this? Tell me.
LMA. It's called Boot Up. Okay.
So there are these hilarious videos online about, like, the toughest-looking guys getting emotional singing this song. I don't know what it is about this song, man. I don't know. Have you seen that, Cassara?
About the people doing the whole thing?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, people are... that move you did, Domenti, do you have a name for that? Anyone watching the live stream? That was... you're just feeling it.
That's called I Didn't Know a Camera Was in This Room. That's what that dance is
they
called.
They have installed those now. So we've been talking in the 312, and I appreciate, you know, look, obviously everyone's going to have different opinions on these things. I think where we get in a lot of trouble is when people kind of, you know, where these opinions that may be seen as negative by some people on the left are hidden away. I think that then these things boil over at some point. I think we've been seeing that a lot of people have had thoughts have been kind of surfacing underneath and been quiet. And I'd rather have these conversations in the open, even if they are a little bit difficult to have. So we've been talking about the Gay Pride Parade and the importance of it. You were mentioned Bud Billiken, the importance of that. Other parades that are out there, History Month. And someone said, if there's ever a Gay History Month, I don't think I would like my children being instructed on it, at least not until they're in college. And I just, I don't know if there's going to be a Gay History Month. And I guess, you know, everyone has their opinions. But when it comes to celebrations, you can't deny the fact that there have been gay people throughout history, that they have had contributions to society. LGBT people are not going away. We are not going to hide our feelings like we used to, hide who we used to be and hide who we were. The world does not move backwards. The world progresses forward. We aren't going anywhere, so why not celebrate it? Teach young people what it means to be gay, LGBT, who LGBT people are, their contributions to society. We recognize all sorts of people with contributions, and we select certain months and weeks to highlight certain subsects or groups. Like, what is the big deal? Who cares? You mentioned that safe space idea, don't you? I didn't know that there was much backlash from certain things that happened at Bud Billiken. I've done the Bud Billiken parade a few times, and maybe it's just because I don't see the world like that, but I feel like it's people being themselves, and it's important in that moment to feel like you belong and you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Right. Well, as long as you have a culture where people outside the culture are kind of looking at it, they have an opinion of it. And then you have, I'm sure there are probably, people in the gay community who don't like how some other people present.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying, yes.
Yes.
You're like, oh, come on, don't put us in that light.
Yeah.
Or something like that, which is not...
There you go.
But you got to stop yourself from doing that. You know, like, you start to make that comment and then you don't want to... You got to stop yourself from doing that a little bit. Or do you feel like that's okay to kind of voice out?
No, I think you've got to let people be themselves, especially in these certain spaces that are set aside for you to be the full totality of however you present and however you embrace yourself. And so, and the question just comes to, what does it mean to have a space where that is where you can be yourself, free of judgment, etc.? The problem is, in the world of social media, where everything is broadcast to everyone and everyone has an opinion about everything, which is great, which is what makes America America, but it's also what complicates some of these things that are for specific communities to celebrate their uniqueness.
Yeah. We're getting some texts in that go to that religious right place, and I have no problem with people who are religious and believe their Bible word for word and what it is. And we've gotten a nice long text message about the abnormalities of homosexuality and all those sorts of things, which are arguments that have been tried and true and used for years and years and years and decades and centuries. But I don't feel like they have a place in modern day society in terms of how we interact as a culture amongst each other and how we interact as the relationship between our government and ourselves. Our laws are not dictated by religion, so any argument that quotes the Bible for making policy, I feel, is null and void. Any argument that quotes the Bible for how we in a negative way for how we should all live together in a community also negates the fact that, like what I was saying, we aren't going anywhere. There's going to be gay people whether you hate them or not. So why not find some common ground to at least live in peace and promote some sort of harmony? Like, what is the point? You're never going to get rid of gay people. Like, that's not going to happen. So I just don't see what the hatred that boils in people about this. Like, why don't they just, who cares anymore?
Well, without taking a specific, without honing in on that issue of whether something is right or wrong or whether you agree with it, I think that main piece of it is about the humanity of loving a human being. So if you don't agree with a person's lifestyle, it has nothing to do with hi, please, thank you, those common courtesies.
Right.
I think when you work with people, when you love people, when you love their personality, when you're friends with them, I just don't understand how who you go home to affects my life.
Right.
You know, I mean. Yeah, I don't know.
I think you make.
I respect people who have those views too, and in the religious space as well. But right. I just hope that those views don't shape the way they interact with the rest of the world, because you're going to come in contact with people from all walks of life, and I don't think it's godly to treat them a certain type of way because of your perception of how they live.
Yeah, I hate people who selectively choose certain parts of the passages of the Bible to quote their things when they ignore what I think is probably the vast majority of Christian teachings, which is, of course, is be friendly to thy neighbor and love each other. I just don't like selective, and people on the left and right do this equally, whether it's quoting from the Bible or quoting from the Constitution. You pick and choose certain parts. I don't think that's fair to do. I think you gotta kind of embrace all of it, so.
Yeah.
3-1-2-9-1. Podcast this and send this to like 3-4 certain people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man,
oh man,
right?
Man, it's been real out here. It's so real.
I want to give the 312 a chance because they were the ones that mentioned about not teaching kids gay history. When they say that they're not against gay, I am against any early presentation to children. I don't really understand what is so bad to that it would add to the confusion. Should we instruct, this person says, should we instruct on homosexual sexual instruction too now? For example, when you're in health class, when you're in high school or when you're in eighth grade or fifth grade or sixth grade. What is wrong with telling kids the way of the world? You're not instructing them how to have gay sex.
Right.
You're telling them that, hey, because guess what? I knew I was gay when I was 11 years old. So what, that's sixth grade? Mm. Like, you know? Yeah. It would have been really nice for an adult, for someone who's in charge of my education, to tell me that it is normal, that there are people that, there are many other people that feel that way, that it is not something to be ashamed of. Like, that would have been wonderful.
Yeah.
So this person's thinking about the kids out there that might be, that might learn too much or might get too much information or be scared away or maybe some people are convinced they'll turn gay because of the information. No, how about the kid that might be thinking about killing themselves because they do not know they think something's wrong with them.
Right.
Like, I used to, like, people in this city often say, oh, it's a choice. I'm not a very religious person, but I went to church at the time. I would pray every day to not be gay. Like, I mean, who would choose that lifestyle to pray that, to ask for anything, to not be the way I was? And I grew up in a hippy-dippy loving family, and I knew that my parents would love me no matter what. Can you imagine kids that don't have that safety net, that security? Why not teach it in public education? Like, and in sexual health class. Of course you should.
And with the sexual health thing, because, like, I came out my freshman year of high school, but then I had to sit through a sex ed class. Like, I don't care what straight couples do. That doesn't help me.
Right.
Kids are going to have sex regardless of what you tell them. Teaching them about how to be safe doesn't, you know, prevent them from doing it or not doing it. They're going to do it one way or the other.
Right.
So I feel like you should teach them about how to have safe sex across the entire spectrum.
Yeah.
Regardless of who they're going to choose to be their partner.
And newsflash, it ain't all that different, by the way. I don't want to get into the anatomy of things.
It's not like acrobatics.
Yes.
John is drawing a diagram.
Yeah,
right
it's
now,
all
guys.
Very similar things that are happening. You can cover it all. But I think that our education system and our leaders, especially in the health fields, should be talking about this stuff. And whether it's talking about feelings, thoughts, anything like that, the sexual side of things, or just the accomplishments of people in certain groups, whether it's Black History Month, whether it give people some time in the sun to show that there are leaders in the fields. Like Tim Cook, out gay guy, CEO of Apple. Be nice to see that as a kid when you're 12, 13 years old. To celebrate that there are business leaders that look like you, that are like you, that have made it through the rough patches of life and have made it to higher ground.
I might be late, but this speaks to at least how much it doesn't matter to me. I didn't know Tim Cook was gay.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't
know. Well, I better do some quick Googling now that you both said. I hope I didn't
know.
I'm fairly certain. And I believe that the viewpoints of that we shouldn't have gay history. And again, I'm not trying to disrespect anyone that has their opinion. And I appreciate people for chiming in on the text line or calling in. I think these are important conversations to have. And I think we can reach common ground. But man, I feel like we are moving in the right way. We're just going to have some bumps along the road.
And I know we got to run to news, but thinking about common ground, I think what 312 brings up, though, is what has been a more productive discussion, because you talked about understanding who you were at 11, and Cassara talks about coming out of freshman year. And what is the age to begin to have these really serious conversations about sexuality in general, whether you're heterosexual or homosexual? And I think that's a more productive conversation. How do we talk to young people about what they're experiencing, what they're going through, when do we do it, and who's the right person to do it, and talk to these people, talk to kids about what it is they're experiencing. And I think that conversation is one that can come out on a positive way at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the 312 added that a child just needs to deal with it on his or her own. That ain't working.
That never works.
I mean, like, I'm fine. You know, I live a healthy life, and I'm a lucky one. But I didn't come out until I was 22. You know, that's 6, 7, 8 years of me pretending to be someone that I wasn't in one aspect of my life. I lived my life, and I had I've got great friends and a great family, but there are so many other stories of people that haven't. All right, yeah, we are a little bit late for news. We're going to continue this conversation. I got a couple of the things that Domenici and I are going to chat with. This is WGN Nightside here on 720 WGN. Amen, Sarah. There you go. You're killing it. Sarah always kills it, man.
Thank you.
Anytime that Stephanie lets me know we got Sarah coming in, I'm always excited.
So educate me. Is this one of those songs? Is this like these Pride Parade songs?
It's one of them.
This is one of them.
It's definitely one of the anthems.
I played that yesterday, and it was a hit.
Well, she wrote it and sang it as a tribute to the LGBT community.
Yes, she did at one of the MTV award shows, I believe.
Yeah, that went crazy. I mean, any Lady Gaga song.
Pretty much.
We're going crazy.
Yeah.
We're doing some stuff. Yeah. Katy Perry's the same way. Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah. Miley Cyrus on a couple hits.
Well, a couple hits, exactly. All right, 312-91-7200 if you want to join the conversation. I wanted to jump over to this LinkedIn story and get, Kassira, your outlook here. Domenici's as well. Chime in.
He's young.
Yeah. Domenici's a young man, too. Ish. But you're young, Kassira. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
This came from LinkedIn, which I didn't even know did news, but they do, apparently. And they, Chip Cutter writes that people are ghosting at work, and it's driving companies crazy. So the ghosting phrase is popular in dating, the idea that people simply, well, they disappear, right? You interact with them for a little bit,
and they're gone. And just jump off the face of the earth.
Right. But people are, Washington-based recruiter said that she had this person that she was going to hire with skills and expertise. They were very rare. They called her a purple unicorn. It was a perfect find. This candidate aced multiple interviews for a job, for a federal contract. She breezed through tests. She got security clearance. And then they were going to call her to make an offer, and she didn't answer. She stopped answering. She stopped returning phone calls. She asked a colleague to reach out. No one got anywhere. And apparently this is not an uncommon thing anymore. You used to think, obviously, and I think most of our listeners will feel that way. I know I do. If you are beholden to that employer, if they're calling you with an offer, you're either telling them yes or no. You're communicating. You don't miss interviews. You do all those sorts of things. They are saying that there is a drastic rise in people ghosting, including people that get jobs, go through the offer process, get the job, and then just don't show up on day one of work.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that does that.
I don't either.
But all my friends are broke.
They talk, right? You've got to show up for that job. And everyone's got different lines of work. So I want to dispel a few myths. I brought up millennials. There are a lot of millennials do this, but it's not only millennials. People in their 30s or 40s or 50s are doing this. Then I thought, oh, it's probably low-wage jobs. The unemployment's pretty low. Maybe you got a couple different offers and whatever. Who cares? I don't care if I call this low-wage job back. I'm not going in. It's not. I mean, there's a lot of low-wage jobs on this, but this is middle management jobs, people in higher-income gigs. And what I thought was fascinating, first of all, that people would do this, but was a little bit of the reasoning behind it. And I guess it kind of makes sense that after the 2008 recession, so many people became, either they were let go, disgruntled, but that they went for jobs. So people that applied for a lot of jobs after the recession, and we've all probably experienced this, where you go in for a job, you interview, and you hear nothing back from the company.
Yep.
I mean, that happens all the time.
Yep.
So much that you don't even really think of it. You're just like, well, they're just not getting back to me. What can I do?
And while I love this article, John, it was funny because I thought about someone who ghosted on me. I did an interview, thought I did a great job.
Yeah.
I said, hey, listen, if there's some opportunities, let me know either way because I have a few different offers on the table.
Right.
And these things are time sensitive. The guy never responded. I took another opportunity. And I bumped into him later on. He wasn't but a few years older than me. And he said, honestly, that was just my inexperience. He said he was a millennial, but he was quickly rising within his company. He had some hiring power and said, listen, I had so many applications.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he realized he started to see people that he'd interviewed get placed at other places publicly. Because, I mean, when the broadcast.
Yeah, everyone knows everyone. Yeah.
Everyone knows what's happening. He started to realize, oh, it probably would have been good to have a conversation with that guy before he took that contract. And so just as millennial employees have this struggle, millennial managers
I'm still needing some of that training,
that's
too.
That's true. And I find it just fascinating, this shift in power from employers to employees. Mm. Because, again, like, even 6-7 years ago, even more recent than that, people were killing for a job.
Absolutely.
You know? So you'd hear no, or you'd hear nothing so much, but it did. You had no other choice but to keep on going. But what's interesting is how that has flipped. I mean, they talk in this article about how this has really harmed, especially big companies, where they're hiring a lot of people at a time. And when think of all the money that goes in through an interview process. You're paying the person to conduct the interview, to do the research, to find the recruiter to do it. You're spending thousands of dollars just to find an employee. So when they don't show up for that first day, you're losing thousands of dollars. It's already gone. You got to do it again. That these HR firms and these hiring places have gotten smart about it, and now they are just kind of doing rolling interviews. So even if there's not a job open, they're still holding interviews for potential jobs that might open up because people are leaving so fast. So 312-91-7200, I would love, if anyone out there has ever ghosted for a job, even if it was when you were 16 and you're 75 right now, I want to hear about it. 312-91-7200, what motivated you just to not show up? Or even if you had a job for a long time, you hated it, and you just didn't show up. Because I hear that a lot, where people don't give their 2 weeks or whatever. And I feel like you've got to do it, right?
That's poor taste, man. Like, have you ever ghosted a job, but have you ever killed a job interview?
Yes, and not hear a thing, of course.
No. You ever hear kill a job interview, get offered a job, and the recruiter's reaching out, and you're like, I'll accept this job elsewhere and not give the word.
That has never happened to me. I would never. And the other thing is, and they mentioned this in the article, is they find it, the one funny thing about it is people will ghost, they won't show up for a job they've gotten, and then they'll apply a month later again at the same company. Like, the companies are smart enough to write down your name.
Yeah.
But I know friends and people that I've talked to that are just like, they work maybe at a department store or something like that, and they just say, I just didn't go in today, and I'm never going in again.
Yeah, I've got friends who've done that.
I've ghosted on a job.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I love how I put the call out to callers across the world to get in, and it's Esmeralda. Wait, walk us through this one.
It was a call center. It actually was doing, it was terrible, because it would be those things where they would just keep calling people,
mm-hmm.
and you had a script, and it was for asking for parents... asking for children's vaccination info.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it was a bit dicey in that sense, but it was for the CDC and like you would But people, you would have to like explain it to them, and they didn't want to talk to you, or they'd hang up on you, or they would just be, it'd be random dials because, so then sometimes it would just be like, this is a wrong number, or you just hear screeching, or is a fax, to the point where I'm just like, I'm over this. And the way that you would ask off, or you would call off, you would just call a phone number.
You'd call a call center number, you'd just essentially
you would just
return
call
the
a
favor.
Phone number and leave a message like, yeah, I can't come in, okay, bye. So then eventually I was like, forget this, I'm done, bye.
And you didn't show up anymore?
Yeah, I just stopped coming.
Did they ever say anything to you? So they ghosted your ghost?
Yeah. They don't, because there's so many people.
Right.
They don't care.
Right.
I interned with someone that ghosted at a very notable company, and he ended up getting blacklisted from the entire network.
Oh, well, that's the thing.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Is that people talk.
People. I mean, the world is small. Especially, I mean, cities are small. And I think people forget that on the other side of that HR suit, that person is at home talking to their friends like, can you believe I hired this amazing candidate? Haven't heard from her. What do you mean? Becky did that to you? I know Becky Carroll. Yes, she's right. Never working in this town again.
Right.
There
right.
you go.
By the way, you can't ghost on jobs you care about, though.
Yeah.
I know.
You have to be the dumb ones.
Well, but I think that what people do is maybe it's a job they do care about or they want, but they just, they say this, that some of this behavior is not malice, but inexperience. Professionals entering the workforce now, they've never entered this is a really strong job market. This is not what we are used to, especially in the last 10 to 15 years. The unemployment rate at an 18-year low. More open jobs exist than unemployed workers. So there's a real labor shortage, in fact, which also brings up the fact that I can't believe we're so stingy on immigration, but that's a whole other discussion we won't go into. But that people even want some jobs, but they're just like, I got this other job I'll take instead. How do you not call them and at least say, I took another job?
Because you never know when you have to go back to that employer for another opportunity. Or just like Esmeralda said, you might not care about the job, but what if you care about the industry and you're just not cognizant of the fact that people in that industry talk to one another?
Right, mm-hmm. You can't do that on like career ones.
Right.
You gotta do it on, like,
like department store.
Yeah, you do it for the McDonald's.
I don't know, man. Those McDonald's managers talk to one another. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, then you go to Burger King. Like, don't go back to McDonald's.
Go to Wendy's.
That's true.
Plenty of fast food places to choose from.
So recruiters, they're borrowing, they say, from the airline industry. They're copying that approach. They sell more tickets than seats. Obviously, the airlines do that. They just put people, sometimes they hire them, they put them on standby if they pass the background check. It's just interesting. And they say that recruiters are like telemarketers now. So, Esmeralda, you could be a recruiter if you ever needed to. You just keep on calling everyone, begging people.
Leave.
Yeah. And then you're done. I don't know. I just found the whole thing interesting. I'm pretty surprised at 312-91-7200 if you know ghosters out there. And, you know, I think a lot of people's reaction immediately would be like, oh, these are entitled millennials. But I think it is more the market. Like, as we were young 10 years ago, never would do that.
I've done a light ghost before.
A light ghost?
A light ghost.
What is a light
ghost? A light ghost.
Yeah, diet ghost.
Like a mist ghost?
So, yeah, a headhunter reached out to me. This was a few years ago. I was at my previous radio gig, and I was in the market for a new job, and they reached out. It was from a smaller market. I had a great conversation with the person. They said, listen, if you're up to it, apply. But please let us know whether or not you're going to apply so that we can move forward. And I just kind of ghosted.
You went away.
I went away, but we didn't actually have a formal interview.
Okay.
I didn't apply. But I didn't tell her I was not going to apply. Is that a ghost?
That's a light ghost.
That's a light ghost.
That's a light ghost.
It's a mist.
That's a mist.
It's like an orb.
It's like an orb.
It's
a spirit.
You only see it in pictures.
Yeah, I want to email her right now. Like
you should.
Yeah, just.
That's a connection you might need. I know you're doing great here on WGN. You've been on GNTV, WCIU, but you never know, man.
It was Steph. I lightly ghosted Steph. That's our boss here, by the way. I'm kidding.
Right.
No, I mean, yeah, I know.
And people say that, we got a text here saying that, look, it's not smart because, well, the economy's great now. You never know what could happen in 5 or 10 years. You never know who you might need to do. And I feel like that is just a really good lesson in general. Maybe the telemarketers aside, I think Esmeralda's story is reasonable. I think that was fine for you to do, but like, cause you ain't gonna need that job again. But, you know, you just never know in any business when you're gonna need someone again. Or whether that person that was just that HR person is the CEO 10 years later, and you're begging, and you wish you had treated them right. I can't imagine. All right, we're gonna wrap things up after this here. Domini Pongo and John Hanson here on 720 WGN. Work. You ever been in a pillow fight, Domini? You ever do that as a kid?
It's kind of my thing.
It's a weird thing to have and to flex while you do that. I never, like, got that. Like, they're supposed to be fun and playful, and you see these videos of people doing... It's hard. You get, like, one of those real rock-hard pillows. Not a MyPillow.
No.
That's a comfortable pillow fight, of course.
I'm talking to those dollar store, Walmart pillows.
Yeah.
Fights kind of start happening where you're kind of smiling, trying to act like you didn't get hurt.
Yeah. That never was fun. I'd get whacked in the face. I got, like, 3 bloody noses from pillow fights. Why do they present it like it's this thing where feathers are going to be going everywhere? It's comfortable. It's fun, all in good fun. No, I had 2 brothers. One was, and they're both were way bigger than me.
Before you knew it, you were slap boxing, weren't you?
Yes. Yes, exactly. One of my older brother broke his arm in a pillow fight.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
it gets real.
Yeah, it gets real. Because, especially when you got a couple boys fighting, it's, pillows certainly go away pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
And just, it's a fist fight. So maybe that just happens a bad experience.
That was a great, pillow fight of 99. I was there.
All right, so we're gonna, really, before we wrap up, Domini, I wanted to talk about, and I think you want to talk about this too, Michael Flager, everyone knows, the outspoken reverend, and St. Sabina, and he's gonna be joining hundreds of anti-violence activists, and they're actually gonna be shutting down, part of the Dan Ryan Expressway. This will be a couple days after the 4th of July, I believe they're doing it on Friday the 7th. At 10 a.m. is Friday. Is that a Saturday? That might be a Saturday. So a Saturday morning, they're shutting down the Dan Ryan. It's not the busiest time. It's not rush hour. And this is, of course, going to make some Chicagoans unhinged. You always see these after a protest, really any protest.
Yeah.
Name the time, place. People aren't happy when people protest. But shutting down the Dan Ryan Expressway, is that counterintuitive to a movement to protest like that, or is that exactly the point?
I say no. I say that's exactly the point. It's not counterintuitive. You're getting a month advance notice that on a Saturday morning this is happening. Now, the reason why I love this form of protest, I didn't used to, because when you're caught in traffic and you're the person who didn't hear about it, it's not fun. It's not fun. It's a crazy inconvenience. But what's more inconvenient is losing someone you love to gun violence, right? What's more convenient is having someone you know be brutalized by an overzealous police officer. And so I think it calls attention to issues that are really important, but it also forces us to confront the fact that people are passionate about these issues, because we talked about in our conversations before that there's this national discourse around Chicagoans not caring about when black Chicagoans kill another black Chicagoan and we're worried about police brutality, etc. Well, if you sat in traffic for an hour because people were talking about,
right,
about police brutality or talking about violence in the city, and you know that that's something that people care about and mobilize.
But you think that inspires more rage against the cause? That
it can.
It causes more divisiveness? Or is it that maybe that rage or that anger that, oh, come on, and people are doing this again, whatever. Like, you or me are people that like to go deeper into these sorts of things. Yeah, maybe we could see the other side of it. But
right,
there's a lot of people that don't go beyond that first level of rage and frustration. And I just wonder, like, does it cause so much divisiveness, especially at this time, that it can be detrimental to the cause at the end of the day? I don't know.
But I'd offer that there is no convenient form of protest.
Right.
You know, Colin Kaepernick just chilled out, just took a knee, just kind of like, just going to sit down.
Yeah.
No.
And that killed everything.
So I don't think there's ever been a single form of protest that didn't make someone mad. And that's what makes it a protest.
Right.
If people are comfortable, you're not actively protesting. And so that's the thing. Someone has to be uncomfortable, and unfortunately is going to be somebody behind the wheel of that car.
And I agree. I hope that person who is cursing, who is upset, just takes a moment to go, would you rather be doing this or rather have lost someone close, that you love to come to us? I don't want to end on that sad note, Doma, to hear that, but I think it is something important. And if nothing else, this will serve as a public service announcement to those of you that don't want to get stuck in traffic. It is July 7th.
Yes, 10 a.m.
Esmeralda and everyone else are going to give you the details as it's coming up, and it'll be begin at 79th Street up to 67th. But maybe take your time if you are stuck in traffic. Just take a moment to think of why you are, and I don't know, dig a little deeper with Doma Team.
I will say this, though.
Yeah.
I remember at the previous station I was working at, a lot of Southsiders listened to that station, and they said, why are you blocking traffic over here? We know what happens from 76th to 67th Street. You take that protest on the north side where those aldermen have to deal with what it is that you're inconveniencing their constituents with and have to deal with this issue and redirect resources to areas affected by it. Now, that perspective is valid as well.
You go on the Kennedy at Addison, or you go on Lakeshore Drive near Belmont at about 12:30 before a Cubs game, you're going to see some crazy there. But you're right.
Yeah.
That's going to get some conversation started.